It's your girl, Christina. This is Overheard at Yoga. So let's crank up the heat and get down, dog. Great. We're recording. I just want to say welcome back to the podcast. It's Christina. And today I have a very special guest, Kachi Ananda. I don't even know how to go about giving you an intro. I feel like you have done and seen it all. You've got an amazing yoga career that I really admire. Will you just say hello to everyone and introduce yourself?
Oh my God. Yes, it's my pleasure. Hi, Christina. Hi, everyone. I'm Kachi and I'm super thrilled to be here doing this podcast with you today. And I can't wait to see where our conversation is going to take us.
Yeah. What's so great about, I mean, obviously I'm biased. I love my own podcast, but I feel like for me, it's just connecting with my friends or friends of friends and just seeing what happens. I'm pretty casual, pretty fly by the seat of my pants, just whatever we end up talking about. And I want to say that you and I first met, I feel like you said somebody referred you to our studio and you just kind of waltzed in the studio one day and we're like, who is this beautiful, amazing being? And we just kind of hit it off.
Yes, we did. I remember actually perfectly well because I walked in exactly like I was recommended by somebody. And so I made a date with Sally and I walked in and there was you and Sally. And I think it was
Megan
was there too. And it's like these beautiful, gorgeous three ladies and we just hit it off. And I was like, okay, it was such a beautiful welcoming for me to Boise to just waltz into this like incredibly woman-owned studio with like all the female vibes. I thought it was fabulous.
Yeah. How, so you don't live in Boise. Let's just start from the beginning. Where are you from? How did you discover yoga?
Yeah, so I consider myself almost the grandma of yoga at this point because I've been in it for so long. Like I actually started yoga. So I'm originally from Switzerland and I lived in Brazil for a long time. And that's actually where I discovered yoga. It was in Brazil. And then when I was back in Switzerland, I was doing a contemporary dance school. And I discovered a class in yoga and I just was so grateful because I would be dancing, you know, you would be dancing like 3, 4, or 5 hours sometimes. And then I would just go to the yoga class and just chill out. It was just fabulous. And so I adopted like, I remember like we did shoulder stand and headstand and I was just like, oh, to get my legs up into the air after 3 or 4 hours, like tap dancing or whatever the hell we were doing. It was so wonderful. So I literally learned headstand, I think within maybe like 3 weeks. I just taught it myself because I was like, okay, this is so good. I need to do this. And so I just incorporated yoga into my, cool down routine basically, and wasn't taking it all that seriously. Cause I also, you know, I remember like it was a Shivananda class. Those of you who know yoga a little bit, probably remember like it was kind of like, there was only a few yoga that existed. It was like Shivananda was one and Iyengar was one. And then Integral was another one. So I thought they were a little bit boring. So I just like, it was good enough for me to like cool down after my dance routine, but I never thought I would then really get into it. Like I got into it when I went to New York. And so I was from my way from Brazil back through New York, I stopped by and I did a Yoga for Dancer, which was with Hilary Cartwright. She was fabulous. She was like one of the prima ballerinas for the New York City Ballet. And she had this, I can't even remember what the white cloud method. It was kind of like gyro, what's that, what with the machines, like where you basically isometrically stretch your muscles. It was kind of like a, like almost like Pilates a little bit. It was like the first way of like the dancers to heal themselves. So she also taught a class, yoga for dancers. And then I discovered Jiva Mukti in the early 90s. And now that wasn't boring at all. I remember
Is Jiva Mukti hot yoga? Is it vinyasa? How do you describe it to someone who doesn't know what that is?
Yeah, very good point. So Jiva Mukti was one of the first styles. As a matter of fact, probably most of the yoga that we know today in the West or like in America is kind of a hybrid after Jiva Mukti, because they really introduced it. No, it wasn't hot yoga at all. It was it's based on Ashtanga, like Sharon and David, the founders, they were practicing Ashtanga mostly with Batabi Joyce, but then they created their own method, which was called Jiva Mukti, which was basically a vinyasa, not hot, but it was very demanding physically. So we did quite a lot of stuff, and it was definitely heavily leaning on Ashtanga, but also had good alignment. So it was like we were in the early days of Jiva Mukti. We were, before the method really kind of gelled, we were encouraged to take classes in other places. As a matter of fact, there wasn't a teacher training with Jiva Mukti at the time. So I went to get my training with my first yoga training got with Integral Yoga with Swami Satchidananda at the Integral Yoga Studio over in the West in the West Village. So I lived in New York for 10 years. And so I just studied Iyengar. I studied Shivananda. I studied with Dharma Mitra, the Brazilian who, like, I'm sure you listeners know the poster, the first poster with all the asana, the 800 asanas, yes, on it. Have you ever seen that?
Yes.
That is Dharma Mitra. So like I would go and study with him. And then I started teaching at Jiva Mukti and was there for the first 10 years. It was really fun because it was, people would come from all over the boroughs. Like people would come from Long Island, like, and we had a lot of celebrities like Madonna and Sting. And
stop
Chris.
It. Are you serious? Yeah. Like, would you look at them and be like, Madonna, you got to do better, kick higher, reach further? Like,
that's right. That's right. I remember her once storming out of the class because she was mad at Sharon or something. I forget what it was. But, and I, you know, and Sting, he was always a little bit stiff and, you know, like I remember Sting coming up to me after we did a performance at Jiva Mukti, which we did quite a bit. And
like a yoga performance?
Yeah. We were doing asana dance, and there was a party at Jiva Mukti, which was famous. Like, I mean, people were just like signing on. It was twice a year, once for Christmas and once for the birthday of Jiva Mukti. So like a few of the teachers, we would always prepare stuff like, and my friend Lisa Schramp and myself, we did a asana dance. And I remember, like, after one of those, like, Sting coming up to me says, "Ah, next lifetime, I will be as flexible as you."
Oh my gosh. So yoga dance, it's a yoga dance party. Is that what you're talking about?
No. So it was basically, there was it was a party, a gathering. But there was an MC usually, and then there were like different offerings. So there was sometimes there was like
So kind of like a yoga event, and they would offer different little things because it's a party at the same time.
Yes,
like a little mini festival, stay home thing.
Yes, so exactly. So it was at Jiva Mukti, and there usually was like, you know, Sharon and David did these amazing, like sometimes like spoken word and interpretation with yoga. It was really fun, Christina. It was really fun. Like I still have a video. Maybe I'll show it to you sometimes. Yeah. Like it's hilarious. Yes, like we had a lot of fun. It was in the early 90s in New York City. Like the spirit was, you know, Sex in the City was like, yeah, had just come out, like, you know, and it's like that was kind of the spirit in the early As a matter of fact, you remember, like, there's one episode where Samantha, maybe, I forget, meets a yoga teacher. Yeah. Like this. Do you remember that?
I do remember that. I forgot okay, about so, that.
So he was one of my best friends. He was one of my students. We were like, he was in my classes all the time. We were hanging out. So he and his girlfriend were students at Jiva Mukti. So anyway, that it was kind of the spirit. And he even did a dance with me. One time I was invited by some kind of like, was it a cooking show on like, you know, on one of those cable television or something. It was like a popular show. So we were invited and I had to like, they were like, oh, we would like to see an asana dance. So I had to like come up with something within a few hours. And because I knew Anthony, that was the yoga teacher in Sex and the City. I told him, I said, let's do this together. So within like an hour or two, I came up with this whole routine. And then we practiced it once or twice and I schlepped him over there. And sure enough, we did it. And it's hilarious that it's like at some point, like, I mean, it was wild shit too, like handstands and, you know, stand up from wheel and go back. And at some point I remember like I had a microphone to my one piece that I was wearing and like my microphone was hanging because it kind of came loose. And so it was hanging off of me in some wild way. Anyways, yeah, I wasn't even going to talk about this, but it just kind of poured in my head. So it's fun.
How did you make a living in New York when you first moved there for dance and then you ended up studying yoga and teaching yoga? What were you doing?
Yes. I don't know, you know, like crazy. 'Cause I had no money. I was also visiting an acting school. But what happened is I had a really cheap apartment in the East Village, on 9th Street, in between Avenue B and Avenue C, right at the corner of Tompkins Square Park. And the apartment, it was like a long railroad. So like you came in right in the kitchen, it only had a bathtub, no shower. And it was kind of a railroad, which is a lot of these old apartments were like that. My apartment was like $350.
Oh my gosh. Amazing. So
$350. And actually telling you the truth, like the first, I don't know how many years I started teaching, we had a cap on our classes. So the classes that we taught, we got $20 under 18 people and $30 over 18 people. That was it. But I taught probably 5 or 6 classes. And then I taught at Crunch and I taught privately. So I was hustling, you know, but
yeah,
it was enough to pay rent. 'Cause I also like, I mean, you have to understand, like there was nothing else for me. Like for 10 years, I lived, I ate, I breathed yoga. It was like, there was just nothing else. 'Cause we were practically living at Jiva Mukti. We were there all the time. Like, I mean, it was where everything was happening. So that's where we were. I sometimes took 2 classes a day. And we didn't have to pay if you were teaching there, you didn't have to pay for classes. So we were practically living there and we didn't really have a life outside of it. Like there was nowhere, you know, so I didn't really need any money for anything else. It was like all my needs were covered. So yeah, I was making a living even from the very beginning. I started teaching. I didn't have another job. I've never had another job since I started teaching.
What did you do after New York? Where'd you go next?
So after New York, while I was in New York, I met Richard Freeman, an Ashtanga teacher who came through Jiva Mukti, and I fell in love with him. I was like, oh my God, he just like, I don't know if your listeners know him, but he's amazing. Like he's very unique. He's just like one of those dinosaurs, yogi dinosaurs who speak Sanskrit and, you know, probably completed all 6 Ashtanga series that can float up into a handstand and made one of the first couple of yoga Ashtanga videos that were just, you know, they were famous all over.
What's his name again?
Richard Freeman.
Richard Freeman.
He's in Boulder, Colorado. He did a lot of philosophy. He does a lot of Yoga Sutras. And he was the first one who actually really explained to me, because I remember, like, I was reading the Hatha Yoga Pradipika, which is one of the only books pertaining, the ancient books pertaining to the physical yoga, the alchemy of yoga, basically. And there was one sentence in there that we had to, you know, we had to read it as part of being at Jiva Mukti and so forth. And I read it, and one sentence was saying, like, oh, if you're taking yoga seriously, if you're a serious yogi, you have to avoid hurricanes. I forget what else. Hurricanes, something, something, and women. And I remember, like, I was sitting on the fire escape in New York, you know, on, like, on a hot summer afternoon with my iced latte, and I spit out my iced latte in shock. Like, I was like, excuse me? We have to avoid women? Like, how is that going to work?
So, especially if you are a woman.
Exactly. Especially if you are a woman. So I was kind of like, you know, like, this is bullshit. Like, I don't know if I want to study this. I was all upset about it. And so Richard was really the first one who translated this stuff for me. I mean, just like stuff that he said are still like flowering in me, like the way, and you have heard me teach, obviously. So you know that there are some, like, you know, tidbits that come out. And these are from my teachers. Like, they just, they have settled in. It's like a way of explaining these ancient teachings so that they're relevant. Like, what does it mean today? What is it? How is that going to help me? How am I going to be able to live my life better according to these teachings? So he was really one of the first ones that it wasn't just an ideology. It wasn't just like, oh yeah, just believe this. But he actually explained why it's a good idea to believe it. So it was, he basically had a lot of wisdom to dispense. And I was hungry for that. I was like, I wanted to understand more, like how to implement these teachings, these wise teachings into my life. So that's why I then, you know, broke off my tents, or how do you say, pulled down my tents and moved to Boulder. To study with Richard. And I organized like one of his first teacher trainings that he did. That was for 3 months, and took it as well. And I lived in Boulder for 2-3 years and also taught there. And it was fabulous. It was my next step of my education was Richard Freeman. And again, I was basically living at the studio. I was taking Ashtanga classes, you know, like 2-3 times a day. And then I was teaching. And that was basically my life that I had there. Yeah. And then after that, I went to San Francisco.
What do you love about yoga philosophy? What was it about learning a yoga philosophy that just intrigued you so much?
So partly was the learning how to access freedom, like true wisdom. Like, how can you live a life that is in integrity with your values? Like, I always understood yoga to be kind of like the bridge between the insights that you get from say meditating or praying, right? You get like certain insights, or even if you just walk in the woods and you're quiet, your mind quiets down, you're not so much like projecting into the future or reminisce in the past, and all of a sudden you have an insight about something, maybe a situation starts clarifying itself, right? And for me, yoga was always the kind of in-between step. Now what? Like, if you have that insight, how do you implement into the world? Because sometimes just to have an insight is not enough, right? We need to learn how to make it manifest, how to actually embody our values or embody what we know to be true into the world. They're two different things. And so the yoga philosophy, I always felt like that this was helping me to embody what I believe into the world.
I have to ask you, what have you overheard at yoga?
What have I overheard at yoga?
Yes.
I overhear so many things at yoga, but any one time I overheard in yoga that some, like, it was actually at a BART in when I was in San Francisco on the BART, and this woman in front of me, she was saying, "Oh my God, you know, I took a yoga class and it kicked my butt so bad. I couldn't walk for 3 days," or something like that. And I was like, "Uh-oh." And that's what I overheard. And I was like, just having some thoughts about that, because I know that that mindset where you think like it's only valuable if you really work it hard, and if you're kicking your butt and if it hurts,
no
right?
Pain, no gain.
No pain, no gain. And I learned in my own journey that that's really not what yoga is. That if you really want to understand yoga, you have to give up that ambition. You have to give up that violence, or that kind of lording it over your body, where you treat your body as it's a slave. And instead, you have to approach your body like it was a dog, like an innocent little creature. And that you learn how to like play it while you're practicing, rather than trying to force something on you. And so you actually, like in my method of yoga now, you always feel better after class. You will never feel like you can't walk for 3 days. You may have a little sore muscles here and there, that's okay, but there's a difference between being kicked by a mule, or you know, versus having like, oh, that sense of like, oh yeah, I had a good workout, which is fine, but it doesn't hurt you. It doesn't overstretch or threaten your joints. That's what I overheard.
I love that. I like to think of my body. I love what you said about like your body isn't a slave and you shouldn't hate your body. I like to think about the seasons and trees. And the tree is so vibrant and beautiful in summer and fully blooming. And then spring, you see like the little blossoms coming out. But it's like, does the tree hate itself in wintertime when the tree looks naked or dead or quiet and reflective? And so when I find myself going through my body has its own cycles and seasons throughout the year as well. And I can catch myself so caught up in culture and expectations and comparisons. I'm like, no, it's okay. I'm like that tree. I'm not exactly my vibrant summer self. And that's okay, because it's the end of February and it's cold outside, and that's fine.
Oh, so very true. So very true. And this, I think we only learn, like, you know, by staying with it, like anything, you know, parenting a child or growing a garden, you know, we learn as we're doing it. And when we approach it with that mindset of actually taking care, like I think of like my asana practice, it's the time where I take care of myself, my body. I listen. It's like sitting with your best friend on the kitchen table and say, "How are you? What do you need today?" And then you show up with what it like your body needs. Oh, today it needs to be a little quiet, or today I need to work through something. And maybe you cry, or maybe, like, you know, whatever it is, but you show up on your mat and you actually listen to what is needed, and then you give yourself that. It's like that deep self-care, and it's way beyond a workout or kicking your butt, or like even growing, you know, becoming more flexible or growing my, no, it's way beyond that. It's really truly self-care. And that little in between in making your values visible. So that's what yoga is.
I love that. I totally agree. How can people find you, connect with you, do yoga with you? What's the best way?
Well, I am coming more into Boise. So in the next year. So I've been talking to Sally and Hugh. Yes. And so I am going to become a little bit more regular. So I'm planning to come down every couple months from, I live up in Kamiah in Northern Idaho. It's not too far, a few hours, and I'll just drive down, and then I get to hang out with my beautiful ladies down there.
Yes.
And so come in. Yeah. My exclusive studio is Hollywood Market. So you'll be able to find me there every couple months on a Friday or Sunday or both. And then you could also subscribe to my YouTube channel, which I will start putting more content on now that I have actually a little studio down in my house, so which is great. So I'm going to be putting more content on the YouTube channel, and I'll give you other relevant links where people can find me.
Okay, awesome. Kachi, it's been such a pleasure. I'm looking forward to seeing you at the studio soon. Thanks for coming on the podcast.
Thank you, Christina. It was a lot of fun.
All right, bye, guys. Thanks again for listening to the podcast. Please rate and review us. It's a great way to help others find the community. If you found this podcast interesting or valuable, please share it with a friend. Also, if you are interested in sponsoring or showing support, you can contact me via email. It's xtinayoga@gmail.com. Otherwise, please follow on Instagram, overheard@.yoga.